This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run, 7:06 a.m. on Tuesday, the 30th of May. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Wong Xiaoning and Mark Tan. Now, in half an hour, we're going to discuss the latest developments in Thai politics and the challenges in forming a new government. But as always, we're going to kickstart the morning with a look at how global markets closed overnight.
The U.S. markets were closed for Memorial Day. So over here in the Asian markets, the Nikkei was up 1%, Hang Seng down 1%, Shanghai Composite up 0.3%, STI down 0.4%, and the FBM KLCI up 0.1%.
For some insights into what's moving markets, we have on the line with us Yap Jun Rong, market strategist at IG International. Jun Rong, good morning. Thanks for joining us. The Fed's preferred gauge of inflation, the Core Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, or CPE, rose 0.4% in April, beating market expectations. Is it safe to say that a 25 basis point rate hike in June is already baked in?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me. I think with regard to interest rate expectations, just a week ago, the broad consensus are still leaning towards a rate pause with a 75% probability, which is an almost a certain scenario. But following the recent upside surprise in the core PCE index, I think the narrative has shifted significantly. If you look at the interest rate futures currently, market expectations are pricing for only a 40% chance of seeing a rate pause from the Fed in June, while the other 60% is that we will see a 25 basis point hike from the central bank. So my thought is that a 60% chance is still somewhat split, somewhat some indecisiveness there. That's why we have the upcoming U.S. Non-farm payroll data this week, and also one last CPI data next month before the FOMC meeting, which will definitely be key in sort of determining whether the probability of another rate hike will be increased. But other than that, I think what matters is also the pricing for rate cuts. So previously, it was 50 basis point worth of rate cuts being priced for the rest of the year. But now our market expectations are more accustomed with rates staying high for longer. So now currently it's only 25 basis point worth of rate cuts being priced for the rest of the year at best. So there was a significant hawkish shift in rate expectations, especially following the recent inflation upside surprise.
Now, Jun Rong, over here, Asian stock market seems to be whipsawing, pulled between the U.S. debt ceiling concerns and a slowing Chinese economy. What is your short-term outlook on regional equities? Is it really better to sell in May and go away?
So when I look at regional equities, I think a few factors come to mind. One is the region's sensitivity and, of course, dependence on external demand for growth. So I do not think we have seen the worst in global demand conditions yet. I think the full effect of policy tightening will come with some lag. So in a way, I think greater downside risk could still be presented over the coming months. So if you just take reference to the Economic Surprise Index for the Asia-Pacific region, I think the index has seen a sharp moderation since the start of the month. So what that means is that economic data are turning in a lesser extent of outperformance as compared to months before. And of course, the second factor that I'm looking at is that regional equities performance tends to have an inverse relationship with the US dollar, largely due to reasons, you know, such as the region being net importers of commodities, or, you know, having a strong US dollar may drive capital outflows from the region, or even due to the region dependence on the US denominated debt for growth. So there's a tendency for an inverse relationship between the regional's equity performance and also the US dollar. And we know the recent story for the US dollar is that it has seen some renewed signs of strength lately, right? So rate expectations are seeing some hawkish adjustment. So in a way, in the short term, that may also pose a downside risk to equities performance in the region.
So then what should we do, Jurong? Where shall we park our money if really the mantra sell in May and go away holds true?
Yes, I think for now it's more of, I think overall in the US it's still a risk-on environment, but in a way the performance is not being broad-based, especially in terms of the Asia region. I think we see Japan pulling ahead, But for the rest of the region, our performance has not been as stellar as what we have seen over in the Western counterpart. So in a way, I think for now, the US dollar strength, the external demand, those are headwinds that has been capping the upside for the region. And I think there's also a strategy that we need to stay sort of a defensive at the moment until we have really seen the worst in the economic conditions before we are able to have sort of a better clarity for our equity performance right ahead. So for now, I think overall the downside risk, at least for the region, is still intact. And if you look at China, it has been a disappointing on the economic data as well. So overall, I think at least for China, it could still continue to be a low for longer picture. So I think in a way, patience may still be warranted, at least for the Asia Pacific region.
Okay, so you brought up China. Let's talk about that market, right? Clearly disappointed. I think the initially at the beginning of the year, the reopening theme was supposed to be a catalyst for the region. Do you think there's what then is going to resuscitate the Chinese equity markets? Because the broader benchmarks have clearly underperformed.
Yes, so for Chinese equities, yes, I think you are definitely right. The reopening optimism has seen some fizzling off. I think it has not been as robust or as strong as what many expected, at the start of the year. Overall, for Chinese equities, definitely in a way, I believe that patience may really have to be warranted. I think there may still be room for positive surprises moving forward. We'll have to see about that. But overall, I think the key catalyst is that we may have to see supportive measures coming in place by authorities. Because if you look across historical instances, usually when we see support from authorities coming in, it tends to be followed through with some positive gains in terms of our Chinese equities performance. And on a valuation perspective, valuation for the Chinese stocks are still trailing behind its global counterparts. So that also leaves room for catch-up growth. But we really have to see the reopening and the economic recovery providing some conviction in terms of more positive surprises in growth data. But at least for now, that has not been cited yet.
Can we take a look down south, Jun Rong, to where you are really? Singapore's April industrial production contracted more than forecast, indicating weakness in manufacturing, even as other sectors like property and tourism have been on a tear. I mean, where is this weakness coming from, and is this related to trade with China?
Yeah, so when we look at Singapore's April industrial production, definitely not a very pretty figure. Down 6.9% year on year. The expectations was for a 4.4% contraction. So some wide underperformance there. And it also marked the seventh straight month of a year-on-year decline for the figure. So if you dive deeper, I think the electronic segment continued to be the main drag on growth. So it contracted 8.7% from a year ago, and the segment actually accounts for 45% of the overall manufacturing sector. And this weak showing that we have seen is actually largely in line with the contraction in export figures that we have witnessed earlier in the month. And China is definitely a key factor. So exports has declined 21% year on year in April. So recovery on that front continues to be lackluster and more subdued in that sense. But other than that, we are also seeing exports to Malaysia has been contracting at a deeper level as well, declining 35% in April, compared to the 23% contraction in March. So overall, I think the weak showing reflects some degree of the higher base from a year ago, but also a dimmer and less optimistic economic outlook, and also a global tech down cycle playing out. And it seems that downside risks may, at least for now, continue to be presented over the coming months.
Jun Rong, speaking of flying high, Singapore Airlines recorded solid earnings and paid out bumper bonuses to staff. Do you have an outlook of the aviation sector, and is it totally clear skies ahead for regional carriers like SIA and Cathay Pacific?
So for Singapore, if you look at the airport traffic statistics, I think passenger movement thus far has remained very robust. We haven't seen any signs of peaking, and I believe the upcoming school holidays in June should continue to keep up the momentum for air travel demand as well. So that's for Singapore. But if you were to broaden out the scope to look at a global international travel, I think recent data from the International Air Transport Association, which is an association representing some of the world's major top airlines, they actually mentioned that forward booking data for the May to September period actually continue to display a strong travel demand across all regions, particularly for Asia Pacific, So they predict the highest growth of around 135% increase just from a year ago, largely as, you know, pent-up travel demand continues to play out in the region. So the first spot goes to Asia Pacific. This is followed by the Middle East with a 43% growth from a year ago. While at the bottom of the table, I think the region with the slowest growth is North America. So they projected a 14% increase in terms of a forward booking. So largely due to a delayed timeline of border reopening, I think travel momentum in Asia Pacific should continue to remain robust for the coming quarters. And that should continue to underpin the top and bottom line for many regional carriers, as you mentioned, such as SIA and Cathay. So while some may highlight the persistence of cost pressure, you know, as a headwind for earnings, I think the current strong demand for travel has actually allowed airlines to pass on some costs to consumers to help offset some of this pressure. So overall, we could still be looking at continued strong performance in these airlines. So just a few examples, I think recently SIA has raised their dividend. If you look at the Qantas Airways, they also raised its share buyback. So all of which should be served as, you know, some of a vote of confidence from the management in terms of the further recovery for its business.
All right, Jun Rong, thanks so much for speaking with us. That was Yap Jun Rong, market strategist at IG International, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the days and weeks ahead.
So I think my strategy will be sell in May and go FD.
Well, you're not wrong. Actually, money market funds have seen the greatest inflow in the last few months, partially because cash, you can get as much as 4.5% even here in Malaysia, and surprisingly, even in Singapore. So cash is no longer trash. But if you want to make your assets sweat even harder because inflation is so high, then eventually you would have to wade into riskier assets. Just the question of when,
where to put it. Yeah,
where to put it. But then, you know, I'm not a big believer in timing markets because you're not going to get it right.
It's true. Yeah, I think that's always the draw there. 7:18 in the morning, we're going to head into some messages, but we'll come back to look at some of the top headlines in the newspapers and portals this morning. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.